Welcome everyone to The Enthusiast Life. I am your host, Mark Turcotte. I'm so glad each and every one of you have decided to make me a part of your day. Well, my friends, it is Monday, May 13th, 2024. And yes, we are back again here to talk about some of the fun news and things that have been going on this past week, including I've actually been playing that hot new release that came out that everybody is all excited about that just dropped. Well, let's say it just maybe kind of dropped, not an official release, begins with an H. I'm not talking about Hades 2. Talking about another game we're going to be getting into here in a little bit, as well as some Marvel Rivals chat and some of the big game stories that kind of happened over the past 2 weeks that kind of tell us a little bit about where the game industry is right now. I got to be honest, it's a little bit troubling to say the least. But to kick it off here, as always, let's talk about some housekeeping here. Don't forget, you can always email me at theenthuselife@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Turca, M-A-R-K-T-U-R-C. And in case you missed it, this past Friday, we released our latest Retro Game Club. We talked about Super Mario RPG, The Legend of the Seven Stars, the SNES Classic. So go tune into that. We even got a little bit into the new release too. So if you have played the new version of the game that just released here this past fall over on the Switch, we talked a little bit about that as well. But we kind of broke down the game, the history of the game, our thoughts on the game, the characters, the story, the soundtrack, all that. So go check that out. That is in the feed. And coming up next in Retro Game Club, which is actually not going to be an episode until May 30th, is we will be playing The Legend of Zelda, The Minish Cap, which, yeah, you may be thinking, like, how is that a retro game? I mean, I think it came out in 2005, so it's not even officially 20 years old. But for us, a lot of us didn't play it. I was trying to remember, I think I might have played the intro to that game, but I never actually owned it. I think, you know, I had a friend that had it, just being a Zelda fan. I was like, oh man, let me check this out. So I've actually been playing it here over the last couple of days, and it's a pretty decent Zelda game. Like, I'm involved in the story here. Now, it is one of those games made by Capcom because it was a GBA game. But I will tell you, get in there, check that game out if you want to be a part of that conversation in that next Retro Game Club. Now, this Friday, I will be discussing Star Wars Unlimited. There's going to be an episode coming out kind of going over the new collectible, TCG, I guess, tradable collectible card game we will be talking about. And I'll have two special guests on that show to break it all down with me. So if you are interested at all in a Star Wars version of Magic the Gathering, Star Wars Unlimited is that game for you. And we'll be breaking that down this Friday. So be sure to tune into that to check it out. All right. Well, let's kick it off here with this little game that came out that is currently in soft launch right now, so it is in some select regions. It is set, believe it or not, to actually drop June 6th. I think it's hitting all mobile devices, as well as the Nintendo Switch. And that is a little game you may have heard of, but you may not have heard of, because I know it's kind of been off the radar for a while. And that is Star Wars Hunters. Yes, not Hades 2, which, believe me, the shock of seeing Hades 2 come out this past week, I mean, I was this close to picking that thing up. I know the game looks incredible and I really want to play it, but I'm just kind of looking forward to these next couple weeks for me of like games that I'm wanting to play and all that. And just my son graduates next week. I know I'm not really going to have the time right now. And, you know, I know it's in early access. I know there's a lot of content there. So, I should say that it's in early access, but yet I know there is a lot of content there, but I'm kind of hesitant to just like, you know what, maybe just wait. Wait till this thing launches full and I'll get in, but we'll see how long I can hold off for that. But let's talk Star Wars Hunters. So this game is a third person hero shooter that's coming, like I said, to both mobile and Switch. If you remember, this game, I think they put the trailer out about 2 years ago, and I've been kind of like checking in on this game periodically to see like what is happening. And for the longest time, there was really no information. Eventually, it kind of had like this small limited soft launch in a couple countries, and now it's currently out in some of these different regions. But it is coming to the States, North America. I know, I don't even know if it's out fully in Europe yet. But it will be here in the States, like I said, June 6th. And I was able to get in, and I will say this, if you've ever used BlueStacks, let's just throw that out there. You can get in now if you want to get in and check this game out. So that's kind of how I've been playing here this past week. When I saw the trailer, which I think it was May the 4th they put that trailer out, or shortly there before saying it was coming June 6th. And I was like, man, I really want to check that game out. So gave it a download. And like I said, it's a competitive hero shooter. So literally think of like an Overwatch. I mean, it is that. And like I've been discussing here on the show, how into Overwatch I am right now, that this was like kind of the perfect storm of like, wait a minute, we're taking a Star Wars, the Star Wars IP, and throwing into that kind of these Overwatch mechanics. Like, yes, give me that. Like, that's what I want. That sounds amazing. Now, caveat, of course, it is a mobile game made by Zynga, who, if you're not familiar with Zynga, Zynga are the folks that made, you know, Farmville back in the day, or Mafia Wars, or, I mean, I can't even think of what some of their other games are, but, you know, they were kind of one of those original, like, epitome of Facebook games that turned into mobile games. That is Zynga. That is the company that, is behind this. However, I will say, for what it's worth, the developer, I think, is Zynga, of course, is publishing it, but the developer is Boss Alien, I think is the name of the company. The little screen pops up, you know, every time you fire the game up. But they've done a pretty damn good job at making the best out of what you could, you know, with what this is. This is the, best case scenario, if you want to say, for what a game on mobile like this could be. So you have multiple characters. I want to say there's maybe 8 or 10 characters total. Each one plays different. The way the matches play out is they have you essentially, you know, like in Overwatch, you have a tank, 2 DPS, 2 supports. In this, you're going to have 1 tank, 1 support, and 2 damage. The maps are interesting. You know, you're going across all these kind of very similar looking or things you've seen out of Star Wars movies and Star Wars locales. The way the game kind of unlocks its characters for you is, of course, again, being a mobile game, you have to play. You can earn them in-game just by playing matches. You kind of earn different credits. And the track to unlock the characters, you're not actually unlocking characters you want to unlock, which is a little bit disappointing. You know, I wish they had it where if you don't like playing a support character, that they're just not going to give you you're not going to be forced to play a support character. You can just unlock that if you want. Of course, you can spend real world money if you want to buy credits to unlock these characters early. Being a modern game in today's gaming world, there is, of course, a battle pass. And currently, right now in the game, there is a character that is locked to the battle pass. I think if you buy it, and I forget what they call it, like event pass or something they call it. If you buy that character, or if you buy that pass, you immediately unlock this character. She's a Jedi that's in the game, and she's pretty bad. Actually, she might even be like a Sith. I'm not sure, because I've only ever played her once, and that's because there's a mode where they kind of just randomly let you be a random character that you may not own, or you may or may not own. But she's cool. She's neat, and so you can kind of see how she is definitely a premium character over some of the other characters they give you. Now, I don't know if when this event pass is gone, if she will just be available to unlock through play. I would hope that's the case, because immediately then if they don't do that, then of course you're going to have a situation where people who spend real money have that advantage, right? And that can't necessarily be the case. We can't really have that. But then, of course, you know, there's all kinds of cosmetics and things like that tied to the battle pass that they're kind of wanting you to pick up by doing the battle pass, or you can get these credits by playing the matches and then just going to the storefront where you can either use the in-game credits you earn, because even just by not having the battle pass, you're getting these credits to unlock different things. And of course, there's a free track to the battle pass, which all these games are doing now, because, you know, in a game like this, and you could throw it to Fortnite, Overwatch, any of these games, like, it's all about the cosmetics, right? I mean, even Halo Infinite, right? I mean, it's all, that's what it is nowadays, is you're playing these games. Nobody plays these games anymore, really, for the experiences. Oh, no, my friends, they're playing it for the cosmetics, which is just kind of a weird mindset for me sometimes. But let's talk about the gameplay itself. So I will say right off the bat, the game makes an absolutely atrocious impression. Like, they throw you into this deathmatch, and I think it's like maybe first to 10. And of course, you're playing against bots for those first couple matches. But the character they give you, she basically is a bounty hunter. She has a gun that you're shooting, so you're a ranged character. She has a grapple hook, and she has this like homing rocket. Her ultimate is she kind of hunkers down and just shoots off a bunch of these rockets. So she's DPS, obviously, does a lot of damage. But they throw you into this arena, and it's like kind of like a Mos Eisley spaceport. So think of like when you think of the Falcon kind of set down in the area. It's that kind of like a round, you know, little arena, literally arena that you're in. And it just, I don't know, I started playing it and I was actually excited. I'm like, man, this is a new Star Wars game. It's going to be cool. You know, it's a hero shooter. And I did the first match and it was over. I don't even think it was a minute. Like it was over so fast. And I'm sitting there thinking like, that's it? Like that's all these matches are? Like what's the point of even playing? Like a lot of mobile games nowadays have kind of that autoplay function, you know, where you hit that button and just like a lot of the mobile MMOs, you hit the button and they just run to the place for you. Or if you've played those like character collector quote unquote RPGs on mobile, Galaxy of Heroes for Star Wars or, you know, Marvel Strike Force, any of those, once you beat a mission a couple times, you can just have it like auto battle. So you're not even playing. You're just going in there, hit auto battle and they just fight for you. I'm sitting there thinking like, is this game going to have like an auto play for me with how fast these matches were? But no, that's not the case. As you have to play more, which kind of sounds counterintuitive, right? If the game doesn't make it in first impression, what is going to make someone want to play more to unlock the good part of the game? But the more you play, you start unlocking different modes, and even the deathmatch, they up it up to 20. But you have to play more to unlock more heroes, and then even to experience different maps, and then to get those different modes. And as time went on, like I found myself actually wanting to play more. The match is lasting a little bit longer, especially once you unlock. It's the first mode you unlock probably takes maybe 5 or 6 matches, I think, to unlock basically domination from Call of Duty or control from Destiny. It's the mode where you have 3 different locations and you basically have to stay in the area for X amount of time. You capture it, you know, basically capturing the point. And then once your team holds 2 of those points, you start scoring. Once that opens up and you get to the point where people are kind of working together, that's when the game, for me, started to get better. And then it really wasn't until I unlocked the ranked mode, which does that takes a while. That I've put in some time to get to the ranked mode. That's when it really, I would say, got good. I'm not going to say this game is great. I'm not going to say that you need to go out and be playing Star Wars Hunters the minute it comes out. I mean, I would recommend checking it out. Like, it's fun. But it's, you know, it's a game that you're going in knowing what it is. But when you unlock the ranked mode, then that's where, for me, as like an Overwatch player, that's when it was like, oh, okay, now we're playing together. Because once you're in ranked, people are playing to their class, playing to the strengths of their hero. People are picking based on the map that you're on, like what, you know, what characters are going to work on the map. And then that's when it was like, okay, now this is fun because now we're actually playing. It's, you know, unfortunately, when you open a game up to the mobile space, you get everyone and their mother downloading the game, right? So if you're playing in unranked and just kind of like quick play, whatever you want to call it, sometimes you get a good match, sometimes you don't. Now, sometimes it's fun to play that because the other team has those players that either have never played the game or are just an absolute mess on that side, and you're just stomping them. And that's fun, of course, for what it is many times in games, right? But I don't know. You know, it just, it's one of those things that until you get to that point, it's not going to be that great. It's just not going to feel as good as the game would feel when people are actually playing. And unfortunately, when it comes to a game like this, if it's something that you're interested in maybe committing to, and if that first impression is going to be bad, you know, you're not going to stick with it. And so you're not going to become a player of that game, if you want to say, which unfortunately for the company, like they got to figure out a way to fix that. Cause for me, it was just like, wow, this is bad. I was actually playing with a controller, which is cool. The game does have native controller support. And of course, because it's coming to the Switch, I'm sure that's, you know, a big part of the reason. If you play on mobile, of course, you can have the on-screen controls. And that's kind of the default method. But playing with a controller definitely was much better. Now, some of the heroes, you know, it's kind of the standard affair. Like I said, you have that one DPS character. The one support character they have in there, she also looks like a smuggler. Think of like a female Han Solo. She's running around with her, I don't even know what kind of gun it is, but it's, you know, like a little pistol, kind of looking like the 11. And she has a kind of an area of effect heal and then a roll, a double roll. So you can roll twice and then the roll's on a little bit of a cooldown. And so pretty much a lot of the modes, I was just running around with the tank, healing the tank. And you could tell the other players were getting pissed because when you go in, especially those unranked matches, and the other team usually, they may have a support character, but the support isn't really playing like they should. I mean, we were just dominating. So, of course, it's fun, right, when you're playing that way. I had had a couple sweaty ranked matches in there, and you know, I have fun playing support in there. I had a lot of fun kind of dipping in and doing that. A lot of the tanks in the game, there's a Wookiee. He has a self-heal. There's another Trandoshan. He has a self-heal. So the tanks are somewhat sustainable in the matches. But like the Wookiee, he has a rush where he runs and like grabs the characters and you slam them into the wall. And then he has these two clubs that he's running around with. He slams them down. It stuns the enemy, kind of pops them up into the air and they're stunned. And then you can just wail away on them. His ultimate, he picks up this giant boulder off the ground and just chucks it. And it kind of rolls around the map for a little bit. There's another, the Trandoshan I mentioned, he has a, almost like a shotgun. He kind of reminds me of Roadhog in Overwatch. So he's got a shotgun he's kind of blasting with. And then he has this, you know how like Roadhog has his chain that pulls him through. He has like this electrical, like tether that you kind of tether the character with. And they, I'm pretty sure they start slowly losing health, but then they're also tethered to you and can't get away. So you can pop that in, and then he has like a mine that he drops down that you can kind of pull them towards if you start walking the other direction and have them get shocked by that mine. There's another character. I mentioned the one premium character that's a Jedi or maybe a Sith, but there is actually a robotic Jedi in the game. His name is like J3D1, so it looks like Jedi on the screen. And he has a pull, I believe. He pulls the characters towards him like a force pull. He has a leap, and then his ultimate, you can block as well and kind of like, you know, shoot back, projectiles back to the enemies. And then he also, I think his ult, he kind of spins around in a circle with his lightsaber, just like wrecking people. So if you play a regular match of the game, you're looking at about 3 to 4 minutes, probably. I mean, when you're in the ranked mode, the matches last a little bit longer. Cause like I said, players are kind of playing to the strengths of the game and kind of the way it's meant to be played. So it's fun. You know, I would definitely say check the game out when it comes out on June 6th. I'm actually pretty stoked for the Switch version of the game so I can stop playing on my PC. It's just, I think it will be a fun Switch game. But you know, I was kind of sitting back and I'm like, okay, it's neat. It's a new game. It kind of has that new smell to it, if you want to say, you know, so that's kind of why I was playing it a decent amount this week. I mean, like I said, I found myself wanting to go back to it and play it, but it's lacking something. And even the interesting thing is, I mean, they've been developing this game for how long? They announced it 2 years ago. And I want to say even like a version came out probably maybe like a year and a half ago. I remember seeing people playing this in other regions, kind of when they did like this closed alpha and that. So, I mean, there's been builds of this game out there, but you know, there's definitely this layer of like almost unfinishedness to it. Like when you finish a match, it just kind of abruptly stops everybody and like the sound goes out and then it just says like who the winner is. And then it like cuts to the celebration screen. I don't know. There's just something about it that is just kind of really gives you that mobile feel. And like I think of a game like Pokemon Unite, and that was, I mean, it came out first on Switch and then went to mobile. I mean, it was announced to be coming out to both. I think it was only a short delay. It was like 2 weeks or something before it launched to mobile. But sure, you can go on Switch and see it, and it has the look of a mobile game, but this is even more so than that. So if you've played Pokemon Unite on Switch and you look at that and say, wow, like that's a mobile game on Switch, this is even more so. Wait till you see it. Like it, there is stuff all over that screen in the beginning. But hey, it is what it is. And you know, I was also thinking, like for me, I'm like, is this going to become my mobile game that I dip into? And when it first launches, I'll probably download it on my phone and maybe dip in really to just do like a login bonus. But if I have a 3 to 4 minutes, or let's say even if I have 10 minutes to play a game on my phone, I'm doing two matches of Marvel Snap. Like, Marvel Snap is essentially the epitome of what I think I've always wanted a mobile game to be. Like, it's so in and out. You know, it's so simple to play, but yet there is a lot of complexity to it. It's just perfect. And so this, because of the on-screen controls and kind of just the things kind of centered around the actual gameplay of the game itself, that's where I don't see this really replacing Marvel Snap. And honestly, I mean, I don't really think anything will ever really replace Marvel Snap for me as my like go-to mobile game. Like, this is it. So But either way, it's free to play. I definitely recommend you check it out. And you know, who knows, maybe you'll have a lot of fun with it. Kind of like I did. Like I said, I mean, I definitely had a lot of fun with it. It's a fun game, and I will be dipping in for sure. I don't know if this will be like I'm buying the battle pass. Like I need to be buying this and playing it every day. We'll see. So, check that game out. Now, I definitely am very, very jealous of everybody this week playing Marvel Rivals. I don't know if you've gone out and watched any of these streams yet, but let me tell you, go watch some Marvel Rivals. As an Overwatch player, as somebody who literally plays Overwatch every single day, the announcement of Marvel Rivals for me was just, wow. Like, you made the game for me, especially in this moment. You know, the hero shooter that's Marvel, that, you know, just has all those, everything that I want in a video game right now is in that video game. And, you know, of course, I signed up for the closed alpha, didn't get in. I've been trying literally, even as we're recording, I'm in the Discord. They've been doing giveaways in there all weekend long. I've been trying to join these giveaways to see if there's any way I can get one of these codes. And unfortunately, I didn't. Just watching the gameplay of this, man, it looks so good. And they just need to put this game out now. And, you know, hearing some feedback from players, like it seems very well, almost, I don't want to say bug free. I mean, people are having issues, but it seems very complete right now. And what's there, I know, there have been some issues with some of the characters, obviously, with, you know, being overpowered. I know Scarlet Witch is just a beast in the game right now, but that's par for the course with these games, right? Like even Overwatch, they'll make a couple changes and one character rises up in the meta. And then, you know, a couple months later or a couple weeks later, they make changes and it drops down. Same thing with League of Legends, Dota, you name it. That's the life cycle of these games. And that's, for me, is what makes these games fun, is going in there, seeing what changes are being made, how they're kind of tweaking in, you know, okay, well, this new season of the game, like who's the strong characters? Who do we need to be playing as? How do we counter them? Trying to figure that out. That's the fun of these games. And, you know, for what Rivals looks to be doing, they're just on the same course for that. There's a little bit of hesitancy because it is NetEase that is publishing this, and they've been kind of, you know, known for their, I don't want to say unconsumer friendly monetization tactics, but that, you know, that's just something that has followed them around with all the different games that they've made. But everything with this game looks to be, it's going to be more so cosmetics, battle pass, kind of everything that we expect, par for the course, right, with all these games. And I gotta say, the character models look amazing, and watching some people kind of scroll through the battle pass in this game, oh my god, the sky is the limit when it comes to these skins. I was actually chatting with Matt Clark, who of course is my co-host on Game Retro Game Club, and that was just like, I'm gonna be broke. Like, they're going to take all the money. Like, there's so many cool skins in this, being that it's Marvel, that it just... and then watching the gameplay, they seem to really have built these characters kind of basically how you would want them to be. Like, I was watching some Scarlet Witch gameplay, and she is basically like a Moira from Overwatch, where she's casting these spells, and she's up in the air, you know, flying. And her ultimate, she, like, kind of dips in and just puts this huge blast out of, you know, all the pink magic that you see in the comics and in the movies from her. You know, you watch Groot. Groot is running around. He's a big tank character. He's popping down the wood walls, you know, made out of his body, basically creating cover, creating these, you know, cover points. And it just looks fantastic. Spider-Man looks like he's kind of like this harasser, like backline character, where he's able to swing in, kind of dip, do a little bit of damage, and then pop out. He puts this tracer on characters that if he pops it on them, he's able to kind of pull them or pull himself towards them to quickly get in and then quickly swing out. His ultimate, he kind of does this big spin, was just shooting webbing kind of all over the place. Bruce Banner slash Hulk, you literally play as Bruce Banner kind of with a gamma gun running around, and then you turn into the Hulk and Hulk out, where you can leap and clap and smashing down on characters. They even have one of the most badass models for the Punisher I think I've ever seen. I mean, he basically looks like he is the Hulk. He's huge, but he's running around with this just awesome gun shooting. He can puts on kind of like this backpack where he has like double-fisted guns, and then he can drop down a turret, pop on the turret, and just start mowing characters down. If you haven't watched any of the gameplay from Marvel Rivals, go watch this game. It looks so much fun. Oh man, it's great. And one of the cool things they're doing with, or the one of the just the neat, I guess, aspect of this game? Well, there's really two big ones. One is definitely the destruction. So there is environmental destruction in the game. And so I've seen a lot of videos of, like, there's one map people are trying to capture, like, they're in Odin's library. And there's, like, this little, like, control point down on the ground. But above it is a walkway that you'll see some of the characters come out and they're kind of walking there. That walkway can be demolished, and so it's getting destroyed. So, like, you have, like, you know, let's say Punisher runs out on that walkway, and down below somebody just blasts it, it just drops away. Or, you know, Iron Man flies up, because as Iron Man you can fly, blasting off the walkway, and then of course Punisher has to drop down, changing the map, changing the layout of, I mean, literally the structure and layout of the map. That changes a lot in a video game. I mean, imagine if a game like Halo or even Call of Duty, yeah, they claim there's destruction, but if there was truly this some destruction. Now, of course, the argument can be made, well, Battlefield's been doing this for years, right? You're literally dropping buildings on people, and I get that. But having a smaller contained map and not just a massive map where that building you're destroying in Battlefield, a lot of times doesn't really make a difference, right? Because there's another one, and maybe there was one guy in there, but you're really taking them out, or taking that building out to take them out. The way Rivals works, because it's this competitive, I don't want to say lane, well, it's objective based, obviously, but like lane driven, if you think of how like a smaller multiplayer map in these types of games works, you're changing the layout of that map completely. That makes a big difference, man, in terms of like, how do you then now get behind the team, you know, or are you able to cause some sort of destruction to then cover your back line so a hero like a Spider-Man can't get there? Or, you know, maybe somebody's playing another one of these harassing type characters, like Rocket is somebody who is, I think he's kind of a support, but he's able to go in and drop like a spawn beacon so your team can start spawning from it. Like if you could be blocking an area where the Rocket would normally be dropping that spawn beacon, and now you've blocked that area from the team, if that kind of becomes the meta. Like, that's kind of the mindset with these games. And I know it's kind of getting deep into, you know, strategy and that, but that's how these games work. And so having that level destruction is very, very cool. Now, then the one of the counters to that, and which is the other part that's really neat about this game, is how vertical it is. So if that happens, and now I know Rocket can climb, but like if you have a character like that who you block them out, then you switch to like a Spider-Man or to Iron Man or Scarlet Witch or Storm, who looks incredible. Storm is awesome. These characters are just flying the whole time. So you take like the gameplay of Overwatch, which is very grounded. Sure, you have some characters like Pharah or Echo that can fly, but it's always somewhat of a limited flight. Pharah, If you're playing against a good Pharah in Overwatch, they're going to pretty much be airborne the whole time. But in Rivals, you have characters that just straight up fly. So watching the gameplay, it's been interesting to see players trying to adapt to having this verticality in the game. Like, it just really, really does change the way you approach the games, because no longer are you just looking down on the battlefield and kind of around the corners, and that you have to look up. And then, of course, as a player, it's changing the way that you're, or is that enemy up in the air, is changing the way that you're even playing then, right? Can you get behind the team? And that's where, like, Spider-Man seems to be kind of that backliner where, you know, like in Overwatch, the backliner most players know is Tracer, right? She can zip around and she's kind of getting around there. Or Sombra, who goes invisible and gets back there. As Spider-Man, you're literally just swinging and flying behind the team, launching yourself back there, and then maybe hiding up on the wall somewhere because he can wall climb as well. I can't tell you enough how great this game looks, and I just wish they would put everybody into the game. I need to get into this game and give us the console versions, because of course, you know, I my PC right now is not up to par, I think, to play this game at the best it could be. So I probably will be at launch playing this on a console. And I mean, there's already controller support in it. I think it's already been, you know, like leaked on the site, on their website. It is coming to consoles. I mean, they would be crazy not to put this out on the consoles. It's kind of the same deal as Star Wars Hunters, right? Like, put it on as many platforms as you can. Like, the fact that they could just put that on Switch, just do it. You're going to get more people playing. It's Star Wars. People are going to buy into just for that. This, it's Marvel. When people see the gameplay of this and see what the characters look like, they're in. I promise. Like, they will be playing this game. So I just need this game to come out like yesterday, and I need to be playing it now. So I'm going to throw out there, if you are playing Marvel Rivals and you just happen to have a little friend code that you don't want anymore, I will gladly take it off your hands and give it a shot. I will most definitely check the game out. I will say, there was a time on Friday night, this thing launched, I think, at 8 o'clock. And my wife and I were watching TV, and I started dipping in on my phone, watching some streams, checking it out. And I went down that very dark hole of going over to eBay and people selling alpha codes on there. They were at that point $20. And I just was like, I cannot spend money on an alpha code. I just could not get myself to do it. And as of this recording, the codes are like $60 or $80. So now I'm like, I could have got one for $20, but still, that wouldn't change the fact that I was paying for an alpha code to a video game for a test that's only going to run for 10 days, right? Like, really? Like, come on. So we'll see, you know, when it ends, how long it'll be till we get to a beta. And, you know, they're going to run betas on this thing. There'll be console betas. There's going to be all that before the game finally comes out. But it looks like it's in a pretty damn good state right now. And seems to be kind of one of the hottest codes right now that anybody wants to get. Because, I mean, like I said, I've been in the Discord. They've been kind of dropping these little giveaways in there. And I just can't get in. And see, that's the thing. It's like, if we can just get in, one of us get in. Anybody out there, if one of us can get in. When you play, once you get to level 6, then you get a friend code to invite somebody. So we can start this, like, friend code chain. That's what we've all been kind of chatting in the Discord. Like, we need to get our friend code chain going. Just all we need is one of us to get in. But we'll see. You know, well, who knows? I mean, one of those codes may happen, and they may open it up on the last day to folks. Please, NetEase, please do that. Please. I need to get into this game. It looks so good. Go watch the streams. I promise you, you won't be disappointed when you see the game. I guess my only fear for the game right now is how it actually feels to play. And that's been kind of my hesitancy like all along, is like, this game needs to play well. It's third person, so that is just obviously going to be different than kind of how some of these hero shooters are. But I mean, Star Wars Hunters is that way as well. But I just need it to feel well. You know, I have a feeling you have to just kind of dial in your controls to get it to that point. But from everything that I've been hearing from people playing and watching, they all say it feels pretty damn good. So that kind of has really kind of relieved me a lot. And now this, I'm just going to probably flat out say, looking at all the games coming out this year, which this may not be coming out this year. That's the other thing. Like, who knows? This could be a closed alpha. We might not be getting a beta till like March of next year. Who knows, kind of where they're going to go with this game. But, I mean, Star Wars Outlaws, obviously I'm stoked for. Final Fantasy Dawn Trail, I'm stoked for. Probably, knowing me, going to pick up World of Warcraft. War Within, I think, is the expansion. There's games I want to play. But this, I think, and again, kind of where I am right now in games that I'm playing and enjoying, this, I think, is it. Like, this is the game I am most excited to play. So take that for what it is. Let's get into some of the news here. Couple stories here I do want to talk about. Some big news that kind of happened over this past week. If you were kind of living under a rock, I don't know how you wouldn't have seen this, but Microsoft, our good friends over at Microsoft, yeah, they shut down a bunch of Bethesda studios, and that was kind of shocking for a lot of folks and a pretty damn big deal for those who obviously worked at those studios, and a shock, of course, to anybody who, I don't know, kind of maybe had been following at least one of these studios and maybe played a game that they put out in the last year and a half that won some awards and was critically acclaimed. And, you know, I'm talking about Hi-Fi Rush developer Tango Games. They were one of the studios that has been shuttered. We also had Arcane Austin that was shut down. This was a team that was kind of developed back in, I think it was 2006 they were developed, headed by Harvey Smith. They worked a little bit on the Dishonored series, and then it's a 2017's Prey, and then, of course, most recently worked on Redfall. You know, obviously that in itself is another studio that was kind of like, okay, you know, maybe you can kind of look at that and say, okay, Redfall didn't deliver on the promises that were there, and kind of having that Dishonored pedigree. And Harvey Smith was, you know, a guy who was very lauded in just the industry for his innovation and the things that he had created before. So Redfall was a disappointment, but you're going to take over the studio. You knew what they were making. Even you had Phil Spencer out there before talking about post the game's launch. Oh, we didn't understand what bad of a case that game was or bad of a state that game was in. Well, you know, you're head of Xbox, man. Like, you should have played the game a little bit before it came out. Like, how did you not realize that? So I get maybe looking at that and you can step back and say, okay, that was a disappointment. But I mean, Tango Games, dude, like, or Tango Gameworks, we're talking Hi-Fi Rush. Like, what are we doing? Like, everybody was shocked at this, including myself. And, you know, the tragedy of it all, and again, I'm not trying to say one studio over the other, it's better than the, I mean, this whole thing was terrible, but, you know, to me, I can't help but look at that and say, here was a game that was ridiculously fun. So many people loved it. It came out on multi-platform. It was especially just here on the PlayStation within the last like month and a half. This is one of the games that Microsoft gambled or doubled down on and put it out on PlayStation. It was a huge success. Just, well, I say huge success, but I mean, it was in, you know, top of the charts over on PlayStation in terms of sales. There was a rumor last year, I remember, when Hi-Fi Rush came out, and I don't have the quote here in front of me, but it was said that, you know, oh, Hi-Fi Rush is not delivering on its financials and that. But then, no, they came out and said, no, it's kind of meeting every metric we need it to meet. It's you know, financially a success, blah, 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 telling everybody that. And you're shutting the studio down. And I think what really for me is disheartening, and, you know, I've been listening to a lot of folks talk over this past week and read articles and that. And I mean, my thought kind of went to the same place as many of these people went to as well, is Game Pass. You know, if you're telling us that the financials of it not is the reason for the studio shutters, and I'm not, I mean, you can throw this to Hi-Fi Rush or Redfall, then what is that telling us about Game Pass? You know, that's maybe telling us that maybe Game Pass isn't working, but that's kind of the point of Game Pass, is, you know, Microsoft allowing these games to be made to create the reason for people to own Game Pass, and they should be allowing these studios to create it because Microsoft themselves are taking the financial hit, if you want to say, right? They're such a big company, man. Like, and yes, I know it's probably more looked at internally from the Xbox division, but there are other parts of Microsoft that could either help out in that case. And again, you know, this is me just guy in his office in his house, like, talking about these financials. And I get it. You have stockholders and that you need to be allegiant to. But in the same sense, you have employees who literally worked their asses off for how long doing what you told them to do, and then you're going to shutter them. That to me is just, I don't know. It's kind of upsetting. And let me read some of the quotes here, because some of the stuff is kind of interesting here. So the first one, this is going to come, this was from, where was one from Phil? Was it Phil? No, this is from Matt Booty. He says, today it was announced that Tango Gameworks will close. Thank you to everyone who explored the worlds we created. Hi-Fi Rush, along with Tango's previous titles, will remain available and playable everywhere today, or everywhere they are today. We had another one from Arcane, and same deal, we're shutting the studio down. This, we had Harvey Smith actually put out a statement, and he said, to everyone that has supported the work from our awesome studio over the years, thank you. Thank you for spending time in our world and making them your own. Now, Matt Booty, who is from Microsoft, he had this to say, and this is kind of where I think the confusion over what are we doing with Game Pass kind of comes from for me and many people out there. He says, to double down on these franchises and invest to build new ones requires us to look across the business to identify the opportunities that are best positioned for success. This reprioritization of titles and resources means a few teams will be realigned to others and that some of our colleagues will be leaving us. So, I mean, basically just flat out admitting that we are looking now for games that will be more, or deemed more of a success. And, you know, essentially tripling down. The quote wasn't in there, but there was another quote where he mentioned something about like AAA titles. And so, look, that right there just throws the whole mindset of Game Pass out the window. Now, for me, Game Pass has been a value in terms of, you know, a lot of these like third-party games and of course, the Microsoft first-party games. And so I've enjoyed Game Pass, but like in the same sense, if you're not able to have a game like a Hi-Fi Rush that just is kind of this like mid-tier game, that was the point of it. Like it makes me, I don't know, it just makes me so mad that that's where we're going to be now. Like I go back to when I got into all this podcasting, video game podcasting, which was like mid to late 2000s. And like that first E3 I went to, and like, you know, you go to one booth and you're seeing like Mass Effect 2 or Dead Space, you know, the EA booth. And then, you know, I went over to 2K and I'm seeing the first Borderlands. And I even think it was, what was the other game that was there? I can't believe it. Bioshock. Bioshock 2 was at that same booth that same year we saw. And so those were games that you knew were, those are AAA games, right? But then you would go over to like THQ or one of those game studios, and you would see a game like, now this wasn't a THQ game, but I don't know. I can't think. My mind is going crazy here as I'm thinking about like just how upsetting this is to me. But you'd have those like mid-tier B games, right? You'd have these games like Prototype, let's say, a game like a Prototype, or I don't know, name any of those just kind of mid-tier games. But like, it was okay to have those games because it would come out, it would still make some money on the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3, and studios knew that that was still going to make them some money, and they could just move on to the next title. And like, those were some of my favorite games, like Odyssey to the West, whatever that game was. I can't believe I can't think of the name. It was like something Odyssey to the West. Like, those games were so much fun to play, and they were teams taking a risk, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, but it was still a fun game. Azura's Wrath, another game that I can think of that I enjoyed, that was just this wacky, crazy game that like you wouldn't see games like that made today. It's too much of a risk. Games cost too much money. The teams need to be too big, and companies are like, no. And so now we're at this point where like, what are we doing in the video game industry? Like, it really is telling how different things are today. You have so many people going to school to create video games. So now you have this whole influx of all these developers coming out. And then you have studio closures like this. That's why I think the indie scene is in such a great place right now. We have so many just innovative games, but like, that's also a problem as well, because if you're a developer making a game, let's say it takes you a year to make that your indie game, like, what's to say that you're going to be able to rise to the top to even make money on your video game? Because there's so many flooding the market. I mean, go to Steam. There's probably hundreds of games that come out every day. Like, what does it take for your game to be seen, even if you have like one of the most, you know, interesting gameplay mechanics in your game or your art style, or you're just doing something new? How do you get that out there without having the backing of like a big publisher, like a Microsoft? Or, I mean, yes, you don't have to have the publisher. Sure, you can put it out on and you can self-publish. I get that. But, you know, the Game Pass situation, that was kind of one of those things where it was like, okay, we can get these games out there and teams can take the risk with knowing the fact that they're going to get paid. You know, are we at this point now where games are just you're just a contractor when you're making a video game? Like, is your job never going to be secure at these studios? I mean, maybe that is the case, unfortunately. Maybe that's where we are. And, you know, then also you got to layer in on that the other side of this. I just talked about the very beginning of the show, two free-to-play games that I am incredibly, well, maybe not Star Wars Hunters as much, but incredibly excited for. I could play both of those games and never spend a penny. So, like, you live in a space now where gamers, like, don't want to spend $60 on a video game, right? And or $70 now, if not more, moving forward as these teams get bigger. So, for the AAA game space, you're in a lot of trouble, man. You know, I'm going to tie this story into this kind of as well, but, like, look at what happened with Helldivers 2 recently. I didn't talk about it last week. And, you know, this week I was even hesitant to even talk about this story because, of course, I'm always talking about the fun, exciting things in video games. And this, there's nothing fun and exciting about the story at all. But we had to jump into it. We had to go over it. I mean, it's if you're a gamer, this is kind of the big thing happening right now. But with Helldivers 2, the week prior, Sony was in a mess. They were requiring Helldivers 2 players on PC to have a PSN account to play Helldivers 2 on PC on Steam, but they had been playing for the last 2 months not needing that. Now, supposedly, in the terms of service, it was said in there, at some point you're going to need this, and so they came out and said, hey, you're going to need to have a PSN account to play Helldivers 2. Oh, and by the way, there's 177 countries where PSN is not available, and for those of you who bought it in those countries, sorry, we never really thought that one through, so you're just going to not be able to play your video game. Unbelievable, right? Like how did you not know that? How did you not think ahead and realize that ahead of time? Now, to Sony's credit, they since have backed that down and have reinstated kind of the old policy, and even Steam was giving refunds. And I mean, even throughout all that weekend, that all that was going down, we saw Steam reviews for Helldivers 2 just become atrocious. But then now they're all coming back up. Very cool that, you know, fans kind of went back in there and they're redoing it. But hey, that's fans using their voices to make change. But when you look at what happened with, or is happening with Microsoft, we can all scream all that we want, but they're not going to not close a studio down because of that. But that's beside the point. But what I was mentioning with Helldivers 2 is the fact that that game, and to show how free-to-play games in that model, and even PC making games like multi-platform, putting it on PC, how big of a difference it makes. So Helldivers 2, as of right now, is the 7th most selling Sony PlayStation published video game ever. For every video game that Sony has ever published, Helldivers 2 is the 7th most selling game. So that's going back. Think of every game since the PlayStation has existed. 7th highest published game. Now, if you take away all those PC players, it doesn't even fall into the top 20. So that shows you that by going multi-platform, putting it on more platforms, how much it works. And so in Sony's case, by causing this or basically forcing this requirement of PSN, how many of those players they were going to lose. And that's just people playing the game now. Think of all the, when you go into like Steam sales and all that, that we know are going to be coming down the line, how many more PC players they would have. So the video games world is just in a very strange state right now. Like when you think about like just moving forward, why would like a Sony or a Microsoft, we can argue like Nintendo all day long if we want, but like why would Sony and Microsoft not put their games on PC or even on each other's platforms? I mean, even when Microsoft put their games over on the PlayStation Store, like the top 10 games, I think Microsoft, it was what, like 7 or 8 were like Microsoft published video games. And it may still be that case right now on the sales charts. People want to play your games. Allow them to play their games. I think we're really to this point now where this next generation of consoles, when it comes to buying hardware, yes, PCs are expensive. And they are, I know, you know, people look at what it takes to build a PC, and it is definitely something that people are hesitant about. But and when we live in a world where you have like the Steam Deck for $400, and it can play some of these games that you are hearing about on these consoles, and as they make that jump to PC, it's very enticing for people. So I think we're at a point where Steam, if they somehow were found a way to really change up that Steam Deck a bit, they could really become one of the top, if not the premier, handheld companies. I mean, we're already seeing like with the, I don't know the names of them all. I see it almost seems like every day there's these little handheld PCs coming out, like the ROG and all that. But, you know, this is kind of a new space that we're entering with that being the case. I think the Switch 2 needs to kind of step up its game. I mean, we're seeing a lot of things about it, and, you know, some specs and things have been kind of leaked out there, and we'll see if they all kind of come to pass. But, you know, the one thing Nintendo has going, that's why I said we can argue about Nintendo, is their IPs, right? Nintendo refuses to put Mario on anything other than a Nintendo console. And as long as that's the case, they're going to continue to sell the hardware. You know, they have their little niche. They're the Apple, and I've said it before, they're the Apple of video games. It doesn't matter what they make, people are buying it. Like, they just have that. Sony, kind of, if you want to say, I mean, people, if they're, if you look at the around the world, people are buying a PlayStation over an Xbox, of course. An Xbox, I mean, they're just floundering right now with their hardware sales. But, you know, it's like, why limit yourself? Like, if you're having problems and your hardware, like an Xbox case, your hardware is not selling, Game Pass does not seem to be the answer that you thought it was going to be. You've bought up all these studios and now you're shuttering some of these studios. What are you even doing? Like, what are we doing? It's crazy to me, but yeah, the video game space is in a weird place. You know, you have a, just kind of go back to even the free-to-play stuff. Like I mentioned, these two games I talked about at the top of the show, I'm even becoming one of those gamers, you know, when I think about it, like, why would I spend $60 on a video? This isn't even throwing out like a specific video game, but when I step back and I look at, okay, this month, this $60 or $70 video game is coming out and Marvel Rivals is launching this month. What am I going to play? Like, I'm going to play Marvel Rivals, or even like Star Wars Hunters for what it's worth. It was like Hades 2 came out. The game's incredible, but it's like, but I have access to Star Wars Hunters right now. Like, do I need to drop the money on Hades 2 right now? Probably should, because the game looks incredible and I know I want to play it. But you know what? It's in early access. Maybe I'll just wait, because I'm probably going to want to play through it again at some point anyways. And you know, this week, like I'm looking this week, Diablo 4 has a big update coming out with all its loot. They're changing all that. So I'm like, I know I want to be playing that. June 4th or June 6th, we have Hunters, of course, releasing on Switch. But Final Shape releases Destiny 2, which, by the way, I actually pre-ordered the Final Shape this week. So I've been playing some Destiny 2. So it's like, do I want to jump into Hades 2 right yet? I can wait. It can wait. And chances are I'll maybe get it on a sale at some point, which usually early access games won't go on sale. But of course, it's not that much money. And we'll see how long I can hold out, because believe me, my hand has been hovering over that purchase now or buy now, add to cart, whatever you want to call it, multiple times for Hades 2. But I just, you know, I got to just think about it. And so when you have gamers like that who live in a world like that, there's so many options and so many video games that it's like, you know, it's just a weird place, video games, man. Like, it really is right now. And, you know, part of that, when I think back to when I stopped doing the show 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, like, that was part of it. I just was kind of looking at what the industry was doing, kind of where it was going. And it was like, man, I don't know. I really want to talk about this anymore. And here I am, I'm back 2 weeks, and here I am immediately talking about studio closures and you know, what kind of what Sony was doing in their space, which the Sony thing, personally for me, I'm just gonna say it, like, it's kind of like a whatever, kind of seemed like a little bit of an overreaction in terms of having to sign up for the PSN account. But the other end of it, when it's like, hey, then you're shutting out all these countries of players who cannot create an account and play the game that they paid for, that was the stupidity of it all. That was where the outrage needed to be directed, not necessarily signing up for the PSN account. That's what it was. But I mean, you can go back over the year and a half, I wasn't recording a podcast. How many studios were shut down? It sucks. I mean, it does. It's hard to be excited about some of this stuff sometimes. But you know, you just got to look at that. The industry's changing. And unfortunately, I think game developers, I mean, you hate to say it, but job security just is not, it's not there right now, man. And I don't know where it will be. And the worst part is, you know, the people making the decisions for these game developers are not the ones being hurt, right? They're still getting their bonus every year. And that's part of the reason why these studios are getting shuttered, is so that they can continue to make that profit, to show growth, sales growth, and continue to get those bonuses. And that's what's frustrating, right? But I don't know. One more news story here to talk about here at the end. We're going to switch over to some movies. Let's get away from some of this terrible video game news. Let's talk about some somewhat exciting news, but a little bit like a, okay, I'm here for it, but we'll see how it goes. New Lord of the Rings movies in development, 2 coming to us. First one has been revealed, and that is a movie that will be entitled The Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum. So this has been announced by Warner Brothers. It's set as of right now for a 2026 release. You know, when I first heard this, I was like, okay, like, what story are we telling? Are we telling a original story? And yes, they are. They're kind of diving into the history of Gollum and kind of trying to create this story. Now, we don't know necessarily exactly what it's going to be about, other than that, you know, Gollum is going to be a part of it. We do know that Andy Serkis, of course, who famously played Gollum, is directing it. Peter Jackson is producing it, and he is actually writing it with his writing partners Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens, which is very exciting. The fact that they're going to be a part of it, I mean, of course, they were a part of the original trilogy. That's great news. I actually watched, my wife and I watched over the last, I guess probably month, it's been coming out. If you guys get the Vice channel, there's a great series on there called Icons Unearthed, and they've done one on Star Wars, they did one on The Simpsons, they did one on the MCU. Last month they started they do one thing at a time, but they did one on Batman, the Batman movies, and then one on Lord of the Rings, and then it even went up through The Hobbit. And so watching kind of the creation of that, like, I loved, like, the old extended editions of Lord of the Rings. They had, there's some great behind the scenes making of footage on there, and so I just consumed all of that when those were coming out. But we watched as Icons Unearthed, and to see The Hobbit and like the creation of that and how just kind of rushed and how they basically skimped out on the creation of those films, which obviously you watch those movies, you can tell that that's what it was. That's what has me nervous about this is let's not do that. Like, let's make sure that we make these movies how they should be. But I'm a little bit worried because it says that they could be released as early as 2026. If that's the case and we're still writing the script now, you know, are we going to be kind of just in front of the green screen all the time? Or like, are we not going to be doing practical effects like we did in the original trilogy? Like, I don't want the Hobbit movies. Like, I want Lord of the Rings. Like, it's amazing when you go back and watch the original trilogy and you compare that to the Hobbit films. The original trilogy still looks that much better than The Hobbit because they use those practical effects. It just looks so much grittier, so much darker. I don't know. There's something about it that just is better. And I really hope they do that with this Hunt for Gollum movie. Now, what do I want to see out of this? Of course, we saw Gollum's character, you know, when he is a Hobbit in the beginning of Return of the King. And so I kind of am guessing and kind of hope we get some of that story and we kind of see the fall into becoming Gollum. I have a feeling that's probably what we're going to get. Of course, it obviously has to take place before the events of the trilogy of films, because if we're hunting for Gollum, you know, Gollum's alive. That means so he's not dead unless, you know, if they want to go and say hunt for Gollum because, oh no, he fell in Mount Doom, but somehow saved himself. No, that's not, let's not go there. That's just horrendous. That would be terrible. But definitely stoked for this, whatever it is. I mean, any Lord of the Rings stuff, Rings of Power, I enjoyed it for what it was. It was cool. There's actually, I kind of in reading through all this, I've learned there's an animated movie coming out. It's supposed to be at some point this year called The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. Rohirrim, you know, the Riders of Rohan. But this is a movie that's going to follow Helm Hammerhead. He was the creator of Helm's Deep. And I guess it's some sort of like anime project in the works. So that has me pretty excited. Let's see what that's going to be all about. You know, a fantasy or a animated Lord of the Rings movie, which of course we had those, you know, back in the day. But kind of to have a new one, I think would be very cool. Kind of using the new technology and, you know, who knows what that voice cast is going to be. But we'll just have to wait and see. But let me know. Are you excited for Lord of the Rings? I'd like to hear your thoughts, as well as just your thoughts on all the kind of the Microsoft closures, any Marvel Rival stuff. Have you been watching that this week? Do you have a code? You can send me a code. Let me know. Send me an email at theenthuselife@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter at Mark Turk, MarkTurc. I'd love to hear your feedback. And again, this Friday, we will be discussing Star Wars Unlimited, the new tradable card game that is out. A collectible tradable card game. I don't even know what the proper term for that is, but basically Star Wars Magic the Gathering. We will be talking about that. So join us for a great conversation about that. And like I said, May 31st or 30th, whatever that Friday is, we are coming back talking about The Legend of Zelda, the Minish Cap. So if you haven't played that over on the GBA, jump in there and you can be a part of that game club. So with that, everybody, I appreciate you tuning in and for joining me here. And with that, we'll catch you next time.